Billy Terry from WOOC, the Hustle Mohawk magazine, at the John Connolly Farm at the Oakwood Community Center in Troy, New York, where there's a farm entitled Solidarity with Venezuela, End the Sanction, U.S. Hands Off. And the speaker are Margaret Flower and Kevin Zeist. And they're from the Popular Resistance Organization.
That's right.
So how y'all doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for talking with us. We appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Well, one of the questions I'm going to ask you off the bat is that why should the people of Troy and in the Capital District here in Albany area be concerned about the struggle in Venezuela? Because that's what people saying. All the things that we're concerned with and problems we have, why should we be concerned about Venezuela?
Well, I would say a couple of reasons that I can think of right away. One is that we have a lot to learn from Venezuela. Venezuela is the example of a country that actually puts human rights into their constitution, the right to vote. They've reduced poverty significantly. They provide health care to everyone, housing, education. And these are things that we could learn about how to do this in our own country. But also because, you know, what the U.S. is doing in Venezuela is in violation of international law. And we, as people in the United States, should be concerned that our country is violating international law and in a way that's actually harming people of another country. How can we be proud of a country that's doing something like that?
I would just add that all these issues are connected. The fact that the United States is spending 65% of its federal discretionary spending on the military and on these kinds of foreign endeavors of regime change around the world means there's less money for the necessities of the people in the United States. It's why our education system is underfunded, why our health care is underfunded. It's why we see homelessness and poverty at high levels. And so these are connected issues. And as Margaret said, we can learn a lot from Venezuela. Now, that must sound very strange to people because we are told the opposite of the truth in the United States. Venezuela is actually a very hyper-democracy. It's not a dictatorship. It's actually very focused on uplifting its poorest economically, providing housing and health care and food supplies. It's the opposite, we're told. So we should care because it impacts our lives here to spend that money there, and because it impacts us that we're being lied to every day by our corporate media and by the bipartisans in Washington, D.C.
So what is the U.S. policy towards Venezuela?
Well, prior to Hugo Chavez being elected in 1998, Venezuela is a very wealthy country. It has the largest oil reserves, with some of the largest gas reserves, largest in gold and diamond and many other rare minerals. And that was all being, you know, exploited by the business class. And there was extreme wealth, and then there was also extreme poverty. But under Hugo Chavez, he started using the resources to actually lift up the people. And the United States, ever since that has happened, has been trying to undermine that process. They call it the Bolivarian process after Simon Bolivar, the great liberator. And the United States, you know, for whatever reasons, because they want access back to those resources again to exploit them, they don't want this good example to catch on and others to learn about what they're doing. We've been investing in multiple attempts at coups, these illegal, they're called unilateral coercive measures. We call them sanctions, but they're basically to try to really squeeze the economy there and try to cause civil unrest there to give the U.S. a reason to go in and intervene. So our policy has been very much intervention in their political process, trying to overthrow their government, and threats of military aggression, and now attacking their infrastructure. And Elliot Abrams told the foreign minister of Venezuela, "This is a we're playing the long game here. We're not giving up."
So what is the current state of Venezuela at this point, you know, due to the U.S. foreign policy?
Well, President Maduro is still a president. The coup attempt has failed. It's failed, and I say that multiple times because they've tried multiple times, and every time they've tried, they have failed. President Maduro is still the president. There's an economic war going on between the U.S. and Venezuela. We're essentially starving their people out, denying them medicines. A recent report by the Center for Economic and Policy Research put out a report that said that 40,000 Venezuelans in the last 2 years have died because of the U.S. economic sanctions, the illegal unilateral coercive measures. 40,000 deaths. So it's a struggling situation, but Venezuelan people are unified in that they will not be under the control of the United States again. They went through that once before. They know what it's like to be controlled by the largest empire in world history and abused and have their resources stolen by the U.S. empire. They're not going to let it happen.
But if I could add very quickly, despite, even with these economic measures against them, they're continuing to build what they call social housing. You won't find homeless people in Venezuela. They've built over 2 million units of social housing. They have a food program where they deliver boxes of food once or twice a month to more than 6 million families in the country. This is a country that has 30 million people, so 6 million families is a huge proportion of the country. They provide health care. They've built new universities. They have new schools. So they're, even with this, they're doing what they can to meet the basic needs of their people.
Okay. Now, right now they're talking about the election for next year, and you got a whole lot of candidates that's running. You know, the crop of candidates running, I think a lot of them in the Democrat Party. Now, if one of those candidates was to get elected, or if the Democrat was to get in, do you see any difference in terms of policy towards Venezuela?
Well, the policy towards Venezuela since Hugo Chavez was elected has survived both Democrats and Republicans. It was President Obama who declared Venezuelan to be a national security threat to the United States and put in place very aggressive sanctions, the unilateral coercive measures, and President Trump has built on that. Now, there are some things that have been said by some of the Democrats that have been more positive than what Trump is doing, but what's going to make the change happen in Venezuela is for people in the United States to be organized and demanding that U.S. stop these interventions around the world, and this regime change effort in Venezuela, which has failed and failed, needs to end. We need to stop intervening, allow Venezuela to have its sovereignty, its independence, and we can negotiate with them, the United States can negotiate with them for trade, but we should not be trying to steal their oil, steal their rare earth minerals that would be used for weapons and for electronics. The United States has to stop that approach, but it's going to take the people demanding it. Mm-hmm. Don't count on it coming from just an election.
Okay. So now, just tell me a little bit about the embassy protest that you were involved in.
Sure. So the United States, after we backed this coup person, Juan Guaido, who declared himself president back in January, started handing over assets that belonged to the Venezuelan government to Juan Guaido and his people. And one of the things that they started handing over were embassies. They handed over the consulate in New York, as well as some military attaché offices in D.C. They couldn't give the embassy in Georgetown away because there were still diplomats there, Venezuelan diplomats, that were under the Organization of American States. But the OAS changed its rules in April and forced through a vote to recognize Juan Guaido, and then the State Department ejected those diplomats, so they had to leave the country. And so we knew at that point that the U.S. was going to hand that property over to the Juan Guaido. And so we went there with other groups, other people, and said we would like to stay in the embassy, because when it happened in the other properties, people tried to get there and stop it, but they were on the outside. They couldn't stop it. So we thought, well, if we're in the inside, we can stop it. And so we were there for 37 days with the permission of the Venezuelan government. The United States government was not allowed legally to come in under the Vienna Convention and take us out. So they tried to scare us out. They brought in all these right-wing, violent people that surrounded us and blocked our food. They cut off our power. They cut off our water. And we still refused to leave because we didn't want the United States to violate the Vienna Convention. We wanted the U.S. and Venezuela to agree, as we've done, all countries have done throughout millennia, to have another country serve as a protecting power for their embassy when relationships break down. So we were trying to be interim protectors until those agreements could be reached. But instead, on May 16th, the U.S. police basically raided the Venezuelan embassy and arrested us.
Now, if people want to support you in your effort in terms of your struggle, what could they do?
Well, there's a Embassy Protector Defense Committee that's been formed. That's defendembassyprotectors.org. We're trying to raise money for our legal defense as we go through this federal prosecution. And we also have a petition going right now asking the Department of Justice to drop the charges.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's next?
Well, that's a great question. We're planning a big mobilization when the General Assembly meets in New York City, September 20th to 23rd. We're going to be having a series of events. The first day will be a climate strike we're part of. We're bringing the issue of militarization to the climate struggle. And then on the 22nd is a major mobilization against militarism to save the planet. And then on the 23rd is an important event that night, bringing together countries that have been impacted by U.S. sanctions, as well as civil society fighting against those sanctions and to try to push the United States to obey international law rather than continue to violate it.
And that website where you can get all that information is peoplesmobe.org.
Okay. All right. And there you have it. Margaret Flowers and Karen Zeese spoke here tonight at the John Conley Forum on solidarity with Venezuela. And thank you.
Thanks for having us on.